Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
The Roman philosopher Cicero said, "The first bond of society is marriage." So what are we to make of the fact that fewer people are getting married today? Does it matter that people are still coupling up, living together, and having children, but just aren't taking that step of marriage? 4 out of 10 newlyweds in 2013 had been married at least once before, so you'd think that they had some idea of what they were in for, but they signed up anyway. And 60% were newbies, but seemed to be willing to take the plunge. And there are lots of studies that show marriage brings stability, both to the family and also to the community at large. And good marriages promote better wealth, more health, and a more active sex life. So why is marriage held in such low regard? What is it that people, especially those in the generation coming up, the Generation Xers, the Millennials, don't know about marriage? To answer these questions, I'm joined by Dr. Kelly Flanagan, clinical psychologist and author of The Marriage Manifesto and the Untangled blog, to talk about his recent post, his open letter to millennials about the insanity of marriage. Kelly, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, and as you know, I mean, I saw the title of this, and I'm going, okay, I got to read this.
Right.
And, you know,
that's the point of the title, right? It's like, to get you sucked in.
Yeah, I wish my titles were as interesting. They never are. But in the first line, you talk about that you're saying that millennials in the surveys, they're losing interest in marriage, and the reason that you've discovered is that to them, marriage doesn't make any sense. And then you go on to say, you know why they feel that way, because it doesn't make sense. Now, okay, you got to explain that. Why does marriage not make sense? Is it just to millennials, or is it in general that marriage doesn't make sense?
Boy, that's a huge question. you know, where I was coming from in the post is the idea that many of the benefits, many of the reasons for getting married, many of the unexpected ways that it forms us and grows us and matures us, are things that we oftentimes tend to avoid in life initially, and particularly at the earlier stages of life. You know, things like sacrifice and commitment and interdependence and empathy and forgiveness. These are things that are hard to do. I'm not even sure that early in life necessarily is the time that we can learn many of those things, that it kind of comes with maturation and over time. And so it was my kind of, my way of saying, like, I get it. I know where you're at. But maybe that's exactly why we do need marriage.
Okay. Now, in all those things you said about marriage, there was a word that was missing. Mm-hmm. You didn't say anything about marriage and happiness. Isn't the purpose of marriage to make us individually happy?
I think you know the answer to that. I think you're setting me up.
Yeah, you're right. I am. That's really correct.
Well, you know, in another letter that I wrote about marriage to my son, I say that the best way to guarantee that your marriage won't work is to get married in order to be happy. Happiness is not something that can be achieved by pursuing it. It's something that is achieved when we give ourselves over to being formed in other ways, and then happiness becomes a byproduct of that and of the connection and belonging that arises from that.
So, I mean, and I agree with you, and this, although it is stated in the Declaration of Independence, the pursuit of happiness. But I think people get caught up in that, and they don't see that happiness is the result of behavior, not, I mean, it's more like a side effect as opposed to the destination in and of itself. And in reality, we can choose to be happy even under the most awful circumstances, which, again, I think people don't get. But you were talking in this about part of the reason why the millennials might not be wanting to engage in all of this. And you're talking about, you know, life has enough of its sorrow on its own. Why would you want to join in the sorrow of another person? You know, you talk about marriage being a crapshoot. And, you know, why get involved in something that's just going to die anyway? And I think that's where, you know, and that I always get jumping up and down and screaming and yelling when you that 50% statistic is thrown around like it actually means something. You know, the idea that, yeah, it is just a roll of the dice. 50% of us will make it. 50% of us won't. And there's really nothing we can do about that. And that's part of the problem, isn't it?
Well, I think you've tapped into something with the idea of, you know, aren't we here to be happy? Isn't marriage supposed to make us happy? And I think, you know, when what begins to change, I think, as we kind of go through life, is that we start with all these ideas about what's going to make us happy. It's going to be
$1 million,
$1 million. It's going to be a certain house. You know, Jim Carrey, I don't know if you saw him present at the Golden Globes on Sunday. He got out there and he said, "Hi, I'm 2-time Golden Globe winner, Jim Carrey." And he says, and when I go to sleep at night, I'm not just another guy going to sleep at night. I'm 2-time Golden Globe winner, Jim Carrey. And when I dream, he says, when I dream, I don't just dream any dream. I dream about becoming 3-time Golden Globe winner Jim Carrey, because then I'll be enough, he said. And he said, finally, my terrible search will be over and I will finally be enough. It'll finally be true. And I think that's part of where we're coming from, you know, in our younger years, is we're searching, we're striving for that thing that's going to kind of prove that we're finally enough or make us finally feel like we've arrived. And what you begin to realize over time is it doesn't exist. We're not here to find that thing. We're here for things that are totally unexpected and totally different than what we thought was the purpose of life. And I think in previous generations, when it was assumed that marriage was something you did, then you ended up learning that by virtue of being in it. But now that marriage isn't necessarily something it's assumed that you'll do, the question is, where, once we've kind of come to the conclusion, like, oh wait, the magic job didn't solve all my problems, you know, now we aren't in a place where we can begin to search and understand and explore what is the purpose then? Why am I here?
Oh, now if you've got the answer to that, you can retire. You know, that's the philosophical right. question is, why are we here? And you point out in the letter about the hope that you have around millennials, because they do seem to be very concerned about the world and social justice and these kinds of things. But they also have a challenge in dealing with each other face-to-face, one-on-one. And I think that is very scary for them. And I'm trying to figure out how to make it less scary. My son will be 23 in February. My daughter's going to be 20 on Friday. I'm about to not have any teenagers. And now my son's much more willing to talk on the phone. And my daughter will talk to me on the phone, but she will not talk to her friends on the phone. They only text. You know, so I worry about their ability to be able to communicate in a way that's essential for a healthy relationship.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's funny. When my wife is essentially my editor for all my blog writing, and we have an understanding that she doesn't give me any feedback verbally in person. She has to write it and send it to me, because it's so much less wounding when I can just kind of like see it on the screen and not, like, you know, my ego doesn't get stirred up by that and try to defend me. And so I think I think you're right. There's a challenge there that, you know, there's something about being in a room with somebody, you know, and working through the tough stuff and experiencing the good stuff, that challenges us in ways that we need to be challenged, that you don't get when you're texting remotely or engaging in social media.
Right. And while I think that social media opens up the world and we can now be parts of things that 50 years ago, you know, it would take days for us to find out about, we now can, it's all immediate. And that may also be a little bit of a challenge. It's immediate gratification, but it's also immediate disappointment. And are we teaching our kids, this generation, how to deal with disappointment.
Right. Yeah. And the turning point in the letter to millennials is the point where I say, well, you know, actually we are here
right.
to die. We're here to die to all sorts of things that we think are the purpose and the point. We're here to die to things within ourselves. I think that learning how to deal with disappointment, learning how to deal with, you know, that compromise does have to happen sometimes, that I do have to, that there's all sorts of gray area between independence and codependence, right? That this beautiful thing called interdependence, this dance that two people learn how to do, that, you know, if you're looking for beauty in life, look no further. That's about as good as it gets.
And I agree, but can you expand a little bit out on, because that is the thing that people go, it's like, well, if I have to maintain my independence, I can't give it all,
right.
Or I get subsumed by what I call the blob of marriage, that there's no differentiation
sure.
between me and my partner. But
right.
both of those, like any extremes, the truth is in the middle. And so what does mm-hmm. interdependence mean? And you and I know that that's the healthy way to be together, but I think that people
right.
don't have any idea of what that even means.
Yeah, so, you know, I think you're getting at something really important there. And so when you ask millennials, you know, why not marriage? The answer is, well, I want to be me. You know, that's my purpose. And I wrote a blog post. The point of life isn't to be more happy. It's
right.
to be more you. And I believe that absolutely. I just also happen to have had the experience personally and professionally that actually marriage is what helps shape you and give you a clearer sense of who you are. It's kind of the refining fire, if you will. I think the unity candle is a great metaphor mm-hmm. for this, right? So, you know, at the traditional wedding ceremony, you have two candles representing each of the two individuals. And then it was standard practice for a long time to then light one unity candle and blow out these individual candles
right.
and put them aside. And to me, that's kind of like the symbol
right.
of codependence, right? It's you cease to exist as an individual. You only exist as this merged entity with another person, which is actually
right.
pretty unhealthy. Millennials probably err towards the other side of, I got the two individual candles and, I'm not going to risk lighting a joint candle and jeopardizing my individuality. But then the lighting of a unity candle and then the maintaining of the two lit individual candles, this idea that this paradox mm-hmm. can exist where I'm an individual, but also part of something bigger, which is where I'm coming at this from this letter with millennials, is that they want to be a part of something
right.
bigger. They feel very, very much like they are a part of something bigger. We have to have that wrestling with that tension of how do I be an individual as well as participating in something more communal and something bigger than me. And marriage is just, it's a way to, and you know, push back on this article, which is legit. Is marriage the only way? Is it the only kind of community in which you learn how to do that? No, I don't necessarily think that, but I think it's one of the best.
And I agree. This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm having a great conversation about what marriage can provide us that no other relationship can with clinical psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Flanagan. But before we continue, I want to just do a quick check-in with you. Maybe you share some mm-hmm. of these misgivings about marriage, either in the abstract or in your own marriage. And if you want to make your marriage a place of safety and connection, then I invite you to take a moment and send me an email or give me a call and take advantage of my free no obligation session where you can get direct answers to your marriage questions. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's FOUNDATIONS, coachingnc.com. Or give me a call at area code 919-924-0463. Now, back to marriage. You talk about in the letter, and I love this, because you were talking about dying, and we all want to live forever. Actually, I don't. I mean, unless I can be like I was when I was 32 years old, I do not want to live forever.
That's true. We all want to be 32 forever. That's right.
But you talk about one of the things that scares people. There are a couple of things that scare people. Being with one other person for eternity is a really scary thing, because as my husband and I say to each other, we're married, we're not dead. You know, we certainly notice other attractive people. And kind of my comeback to that is, I'm not the same person I was when my husband met me when I was 25. He's not the same person. So we're actually in love with different people.
I'm 100% with you there. There's a post I wrote a while back, the 9 most overlooked threats to marriage. And I mentioned in that that, you know, this idea that people say, well, you know, you're not the person that I married. And as if
that's a bad thing, right?
Right. And it's I think the reality is absolutely, of course not. 20 years later, if you're still the same person, there's probably something not healthy about that, that you're two people who are changing, and you learn how to change together and to let the other person change.
And that's one of the things that I think is really scary about marriage. I talk about marriage, and the first challenge of marriage, the first biggest challenge of marriage, is when one or both of you recognize that you are now and will always be different people. And now you got to figure out what to do about it. And in your article, you talk about forgiveness, that we're going to mess up. Sometimes we do it, you know, most of the time in a relationship, we mess up just because we don't know what the impact is on the other person. And then this is where forgiveness comes in. But you talk about that every time you forgive, you have to let something, I'm going to quote, you have to let something inside of you die, like your instinct for retribution or your self-righteousness. And so then you go on to talk about ego. So when you talk about ego, what exactly are you talking about?
Yeah. So when I think of the ego, I think of the essentially kind of like the part of me, the interior part of me, the psychic kind of entity that I've built up that is in charge of protecting me. I often think of it as like my inner bodyguard, right? So if you hurt me, criticize me, attack me, that immediate response, you know, kind of defensive response, that's the ego jumping in, doing what it's supposed to do, right? We needed the ego to get through life. It was kind of a protective layer that we, I mean, nobody gets through junior high without developing an ego. I mean, it's a disaster.
That's actually, I term that hell on earth.
Yes, for many people it is. And so you need this protective layer. That's where you start to develop it. And then we also need places later in life where we learn how to begin to let go of that protective layer, tell the bodyguard, okay, stand down. I can't truly connect with people if you're in between me and other people all the time. And so we need to release the ego and let ourselves be who we really are with people.
And that's really scary, because
terribly.
And you use that. You talk about the ego being protective. And when we're married, there really isn't any place to hide. Now, that doesn't mean we don't try, but we can't we can't really hide. So then what?
Well, and you know, I think we do find creative ways to hide in a marriage. You know, this is, I wrote a blog post recently. You know, the only real secret to a healthy marriage is to not have secrets. But secrets help us hide, right? Secrets are an ego function. They help us stay hidden. But yeah, that's why you see a lot of really pretty destructive conflict in marriage, is that when you can't hide any longer, what the next thing the ego does is it ups the ante and it goes on the attack. And so that's why you see a lot of conflict in marriage, because marriage makes it hard to hide. So it does the next best thing. And so the question is, if I'm in an interaction with my wife, and I'm starting to feel that same old, that, you know, familiar urge kind of welling up in me to go on the attack, right? It's what, okay. I call him Bruno. That's my ego. Okay, Bruno. Like, you're needing to protect me. What am I protecting? And how can I respond differently in a way that promotes more vulnerability and connection in the relationship? And now, admittedly, and this is where a lot of folks kind of balk, they say, But that's, if the other person isn't doing the same work with their ego, then that's a dangerous situation. And admittedly, that's a tension that we have to kind of be dealing with in the relationship.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because there's this idea that we have to be in our marriages by ourselves, and that there's nobody that can help us learn to do it differently, better. And most of the time, people don't get help until things have really hit rock bottom. They're really not very happy. And I liken it to, if I want to learn to play golf, and I go out there, and if I went out and swung a golf club right now, other than to putt, because I've done enough putt golf that I could probably pull that one off. But if I really want to, it's going to go all over the place. I don't have a clue as to what I'm doing. So do I just stand there hacking up the grass, which the people behind me won't really like very much, or do I go to the golf pro and say, hey, help me out here? But we don't do that with marriage, because, oh, marriage is natural. It's like, where did that come from?
Right. It's one of the least natural things, actually, and which is why we need it, right?
that's your argument in your post.
That's my argument. Two of the most important things in life, marriage and child rearing, and those are the two things that we don't get any instruction on. And so I'm with you that I think it's important to have someone to help guide us.
Well, and because you talk about this in the post, you talk about your hope for the millennials, and what you actually say is that you don't think they've been given the tools to accomplish their connection and their saving the world and all these wonderful things that the millennials want to do. And you talk about marriage being one of the tools. And I like that, because it's not marriage as the be-all and end-all. It's marriage as a process to get you somewhere else.
This is, to me, I think I'm not sure I was clear enough in the letter about that. And if I had to rewrite it, I'd probably focus more on that. But I'm glad you pulled that out, because to me, that is why marriage could and maybe should resonate with millennials. And I think it's part of why millennials are backing away from marriage, is what they saw for a couple generations of marriages now. We've seen, for the first time in human history, the assumption that marriage is the end-all and be-all of life, that if I can get my marriage on track and we can be happy, then I found my purpose, I've arrived. And so we've essentially turned that into the golden rule, right? Is a good, healthy, happy marriage. And the point that I'm trying to make here, and that I expand upon in the manuscript that I'm working on, is that really marriage is meant to be a launching pad for two people, right? A place of safety, a place to come back to at the end of the day, after we've gone out into the world and done the things that we're passionate about doing. And that marriage is really supposed to support us in becoming who we are and caring for the world in the ways that we want to. And two people who have figured out how to do that together is really, really a beautiful thing.
Well, and I think it's also an unstoppable thing, because if I have the safety and security, which I don't want to say luckily, because it's been a little bit more than luck, but luckily that I do, where I know that somebody has my back. Now, my husband does not, I don't really think he thinks I'm perfect. I think I've disabused him of that over the 30 years we've been together. But he loves me for me. I'm allowed to be me and make mistakes, but he doesn't take it as anything personal to him. And I think that allows us to go out and do things that I know I couldn't have done by myself.
Right. Exactly. Well, he could coach me a little bit. I feel like I'm starting to see a glimmer of not taking it personal, when my wife makes mistakes and so on and so forth. And again, that's that formation piece, right? It's been fascinating, because my wife and my 12-year-old are so much alike. And so I watch him behave in exactly the way she would, and it starts to dawn on me like, oh, she hasn't been doing that on purpose. It's just the way she is.
Well, and you hit on something really important, because people will give their children that break, but we won't give it to our partners.
Right. Right, exactly. Well, yeah, and right. So I watch him do these things, and I'm like, oh, he's just being him, and I can give him that grace. And then it's like, but then I have to give her that grace too, you know. And that's an important step. So, yeah, 12 years into being parents, I'm starting to figure that out finally.
It takes a while, but mm-hmm. it's really important that piece of allowing our partners to be who they are and accepting who they are. And I think that is a big challenge. And it's scary mm-hmm. when, I mean, but the other important thing is just because that's the way they are doesn't mean I can't bring something to the table and we alter that. So if my partner has a habit that I really don't like, and I'm not talking about who he is inside as a person, but some of his behaviors,
right,
then I can come to the table and say, you know, I'm having a really hard time with this. Can we sit down and talk about doing it a different way? Not you're bad, you're wrong, you're whatever. It's just, hey, I don't think you know that this really bothers me. So mm-hmm. let me talk about it.
Yeah. Right, and it's actually the foundation of acceptance that allows you to have that conversation. Because if there's a history there of knowing that, oh, you really do accept me for being me, then when you tell me you don't like the way that I'm eating at the table, you're not saying I'm a bad person because of the way I know you fundamentally accept me, and that this is a conversation about how to do life.
And again, I think what you just described goes back to your whole concept where you're talking about marriage making us grow and become our better selves. If I took that, that is what I took away from the letter, right?
That's exactly. Well, so I actually just read. I'm trying to pack a lot into that letter. That's assumed, but I think one of the assumptions that I make is that really personal formation, by the time we actually start to think about it like that as we're kind of entering adulthood, at that point is oftentimes more about shedding things and letting things go and getting back to who we are than it is about building up anything new. And so, you know, my 12-year-old came up to me out of nowhere the other day and he said, Daddy, wouldn't it be great if we could remember what we were like when we were infants? And I said, yeah, that would be very interesting, buddy. Why do you think that is? He said, because then I think I would really know who I am.
Oh, my gosh.
Because then,
you've got an old soul in your house.
He said, he's hysterical. He said, because back when I was an infant, I wasn't always trying to make people happy and I wasn't worrying about what people thought. And it's like, so I really like that idea that that somehow over the years we've kind of picked up all this baggage, and that really kind of learning who we are in adulthood is about releasing that baggage. And that's essentially what I'm saying here, is that marriage really is a tool for letting go of that baggage.
I love that. So, Kelly, where can people find your writings? Because I subscribe to your blog posts. I get them all the time. I love them. Tell people where they can find you.
Sure. Yep. It's drkellyflanagan.com. It's drkellyf is in Frank, LANAGAN.com. If people want to subscribe, right there in the sidebar on the right side, there's a place where they can subscribe. I post every Wednesday around 5 a.m. Central Time. I don't think I haven't posted more than once in a week in a long time. So, so that's what
well,
I do.
Great. And as author Joseph Barr said, marriage is our last best chance to grow up. And for me, being a grown-up has nothing to do with how old you are. It's really about how willing you are to make room for another person in your life. And to me, marriage is the ultimate test of that. The truth is, marriage isn't really what most people are afraid of. Loving is the really scary thing. Loving is what makes us vulnerable to being hurt. But I haven't heard anybody argue against love the way that they argue against marriage. And marriage done right can actually protect and grow your love and grow you as a person in the process. So I only have one question for you. Are you game?
We've been talking today about marriage and millennials, and I know how important it is to those in that generation to be socially conscious and responsible. So if you're part of that generation and you're thinking about getting married, but maybe might be a little concerned about the whole engagement ring aspect, I'm really excited to let you know about a company that takes the worry out of this process. Erica DeRue of Love Affair Diamonds and Casey Van Beber of CBB Inspired Design are here today to talk about their new project, which is filled with the passion that they share in designing one-of-a-kind engagement rings using vintage diamonds and creating unique jewelry that tells a story of history in the modern world. So, ladies, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for inviting us, yeah.
So, Erica, tell me a little bit about your company, because there, as I said, there are two things that you guys do in this whole new concept that I just think is really terrific. And one is using vintage jewelry, vintage stones. So how did that come about?
Well, about 10 years ago, I was shopping for my own 10-year anniversary ring. When my husband and I got married, we were young and we didn't have money for an engagement ring. So for our 10-year anniversary, I decided I'm getting a diamond ring. And he said, whatever, go for it. So I started doing a lot of research. And, you know, through the wonderful internet, I came across all kinds of things that I didn't even know existed, one of which is antique diamonds. And I just fell in love. And from there, it just kind of spiraled into collecting. And from that, I started selling pieces, and I just was so passionate about it that I turned it into a business.
And so, Casey, how did you get involved in all of this?
Well, originally, I was a studio artist. My background, I have a few different relatives that are in the jewelry business, and they would ask me for assistance sometimes in design, and eventually my one uncle, who's very well established, said, you know, this might be something that you look into further. And so initially that's how I got into the design aspect. Like Erica, just through research and seeing the different the stones and identifying the antique stones as opposed to the more modern cut stones, I just fell in love with them. And my inclination is kind of toward the more vintage styles, so it was just a natural progression from there.
So, Erica, what's different about the older stones than maybe what somebody would get if they just walked into the jewelry store at the mall?
Well, antique diamonds were being cut anywhere from 100 to 150 years ago. So the antique diamonds that I specialize in, you know, there will never be any more of these coming onto the market unless they're reproductions. But the antique stones are special in that they were cut prior to all of the modern technology that diamond cutters have today. We have computer software, we have all this stuff, but it creates a very structured, clinical sort of look, like a modern round brilliant or an emerald cut, for example. The antique diamonds, the way that they were faceted was a very experimental time when not a lot was understood about angles, so they were cut for visual beauty.
Nice.
Yes, yeah. Yes, they were just cut for being beautiful to the eye, for fire, for flashing lots of colored light, for performing in low lighting conditions because it was mostly candlelight and gas lighting at the time. Mm-hmm. And you'll find that the faceting patterns are completely different. Old European cuts are faceted in almost a flower-like pattern, while modern round brilliants are faceted almost in a more splinter-like pattern. So they have a very different look to the eye, and they perform very differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so what would my experience be? So say I was interested in getting a ring and I come to you guys, or any piece of jewelry, and I come to you guys, what would be different about the experience that I would have in your company?
Well, this happens often. I have men and women, mostly women actually. For the most part, we find that women are choosing their own engagement rings now. But I do have women clients come to me and they say, this, you know, I've researched antique diamonds. I already know that I want one. A lot of times it's because of the romance of knowing that it's old, that there will never be another one like it, that what's on your hand will not look like anything anyone in your circle has. So they want that one-of-a-kind uniqueness that an antique diamond can bring. So they generally will come to me with, you know, a wish list and a budget. And depending on what I have in inventory, I will try to help match them with their perfect stone. And from that point, we can either find them a vintage mounting if they want a vintage ring. But for the most part, we then go through and design a custom setting so that we can create their dream ring. And that's when Casey and her team come in to play. She has a wonderful CAD artist, and we do beautiful renderings of the ring design. We can do complete custom, or we create something that we've made in the past for another client. So it's really a very customized process to get her dream ring on her finger.
So, Casey, Erica says that the clients will work with you. So do you create, I guess, what I would call new vintage settings, or do you just use what you can find out there?
No, everything that I create is inspired. And not all of it is inspired, because some of the settings are they just materialize from my own kind of brainstorming. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the clients will parameters of a certain design, a style that they're inclined toward, different key elements within a design that they definitely want to see, whether it's claw prongs, 8 prongs, 6 prongs, they want it bezel set, they want, you know, antique pave, filigree, whatever. And they'll provide Erica these specifications, and she notes them all down. And a lot of times the clientele will provide simple sketches. Like, they can't quite mm-hmm. verbalize it, so they'll provide images. Mm-hmm. And I'll provide sketches. And then I take all that and I collaborate all that together and kind of come up with my interpretation of it. I mean, certainly every one of my creations, I think, is pretty easily identified as a CVB mm-hmm. just by the way I put things together and concentrate on the angles and the fluidity within a design. I'm, like I said, I have an art background. I don't have a jewelry background. I have an art background. So that full composition is very important to me. I don't like things to be broken down. I mean, of course, when you're creating a piece, things have to be broken down. But once it's all together, I really want it to flow nicely. But anyway, back to the inspired versus sourcing. If a client wants a pre-existing design that's market, and Erica finds it, then I mean, that's awesome, because, you know, the vintage pieces are gorgeous. They're incredible. Many times that's not the case, and we actually have to come up with something that is unique for the client. So,
right.
You know, Erica's back and forth with the client is also extremely important. I mean, not uh-huh. only getting an idea of exactly what that, you know, their vision is, but also their personality, whether or not they're really active with their hands, whether they want to be wearing this every single day. I mean, durability is an issue with
sure.
us. And we aim is to provide something that you can wear every day. It has the durability to withstand everyday wear. However, it's also extremely striking and unique. So,
well, and it sounds like such a wonderful process. It sounds like that you take the time and are really interested in getting what the client really wants to have. So it sounds like a very collaborative process between the three of you.
That's exactly how
it's very hands-on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can you tell me, if I'm one of these people who wants to collaborate with you, how could I find you guys?
Well, the best place to start is with my website, loveaffairdiamonds.com. And through the website, you can access an inventory of loose antique diamonds and lots of examples of finished rings that Casey and I have completed together, lots to look at. And then shoot me an email from there, and we can discuss settings.
And I have to say, I have looked at some of the, I have looked at your website, and they are gorgeous.
Thank you so much.
Thank
That's
you.
So kind.
So
yes,
to continue, getting practical information on how to have a great and lasting marriage, keep listening to the show and keep listening to the show to find out more about these great companies that you can contact to create your unique relationship and marriage. And until next week, stay loving.